food fans, welcome to the Alton Browncast. I'm Alton Brown. We're recording from a small padded room above my garage in Atlanta, Georgia. And we got a heck of a show for you today. Some nice calls lined up. Also, some pretty juicy questions have come in our email bag at askalton@altonbrown.com. So we're going to be answering those. And I'm excited about the interview today because this is an interview that's going to make two different groups of people happy. If you're a Good Eats fan, this is going to make you happy. And if you're a fan of the Cartoon Network program, or I guess it's more the Adult Swim program, Archer, you're also going to be very happy because we've got one of the leading talent from that program and from a lot of Good Eats episodes here, and that would be Lucky Yates, who, if you're a Good Eats fan, you would certainly know in many historical roles on Good Eats, including Louis Pasteur, who destroyed milk bacteria with a flamethrower on the show, and also, of course, the Dungeon Master, one of the most beloved characters ever on Good Eats. So Lucky Yates is going to be on the show. Oh, and also an extremely accomplished puppeteer, built a lot of the puppets that are used on the show. And if you're a follower of mine on Twitter, at Alton Brown on Twitter, my little avatar is actually a puppet of me that was created by Lucky Yates. He's probably going to be wanting some kind of rights about that, which I imagine is why he's agreed to, you know, come on the show today. All right, now is the scariest time on the Alton Brown cast. We're going to take some calls. On the line, we've got Anthony. Anthony, are you with us?
Oh, how you doing, Mr. Brown?
Anthony, what's up? Where are you? What are you doing?
I'm in New York City.
So what can I do for you?
And my question was, if you could have your top five fresh herbs you would have on hand at all times.
Oh, you know what? That's easy, because I actually kind of have a rule about that, and I even have kind of a special place in my refrigerator for them. I know it sounds boring, but I adore parsley. I love flat leaf Italian parsley, and I never run out of it. I'm also really big on chives, thyme, fresh thyme, and it can a lot of different times. I actually like lemon thyme. If you've ever used that, that's a favorite of mine. I use it on chicken, on all kinds of things. I'm a big fan of that. I always keep mint around, because I'm a Southerner and I drink bourbon. And I like me a mint julep. And mint is good in salads. Like, I make tabbouleh and other Middle Eastern salads. So I'll put mint in that. And sometimes, I'll cheat and I'll take my daughter's vanilla ice cream and I'll melt it and I'll put a bunch of mint in it and then refreeze it into mint ice cream or mint chip ice cream. So I always keep mint around. And then I think the other one for me would probably be oregano. These are all these are normal. I got nothing shocking for you. You know, I don't have a curry tree outside. You know, I'm not growing my own sumac. I'm not growing my own, you know, anything wacky like that. But those are all things that you can grow in a window box. I also have a lot of rosemary, but because of where I live, we can grow it in big shrubs. But you know what? I wouldn't, if I didn't already have it, I wouldn't have to have it. I could live without rosemary, but these other things I would keep on hand all the time.
Okay, and you said you keep them in your fridge. How do you store them like that?
You know what I do? First off, some people say don't wash your herbs as soon as you get them. I say BS. Things like parsley, I'm going to wash them anyway. So I hold the bunch upside down under cold water. I make sure all the sand is off, because flatleaf parsley can especially be pretty sandy. And I don't do this with any of the other herbs. Well, then what I do is I knock off all the water and then I spread it out on a long piece of paper towel, like 2 feet long paper towel.
Yep.
And then I roll it up really tight so that, you know, the paper towel and the parsley is all kind of wound in together. Then I put that into a zip top bag and I suck out all the air. I literally put my mouth down on, I close it up except for a little pucker there at the end. And I just suck it into my mouth and I suck all that air out until it is literally, you know, just completely flattened, seal it up. And I can keep herbs fresh in the refrigerator in really good shape for a minimum of 2 weeks. When I'm using cilantro, I find that it does better if I stick it in like a tall glass with just a little bit of water in the bottom. And then, you know what, whenever I travel to a hotel, I always take the little boxes of shower caps and I put a shower cap over the top of the cilantro so that it's down snugged up next to the glass. And that seems to be the best way to keep cilantro, which otherwise seems to just go very, very gooey very, very quickly.
All right. I appreciate it. Really. Thank you.
All right, man. Thanks for calling from New York City.
Right.
We've got Carol. Carol, are you on the line with us at the Alton Browncast?
Hey, Alton. It's Carol.
So what can I do for you, ma'am?
Well, I have been diagnosed with Meniere's disease. It's a condition of the inner ear where you lose your hearing. And I'm a musician. And one of the cures for this are not cures, but one of the things to stave off losing your hearing is to cut your sodium out of your diet. And we're talking drastic, like 1,000 milligrams a day, which is basically water and, gruel. So I'm really struggling to add flavor. I love to cook, and I'm struggling without the use of salt. Do you have anything for me?
It's one of those things where it's almost impossible because, you know, we're actually hardwired to taste salt. You know, it's actually one of the things that we have chemical reaction, you know, chemical receptors for in our mouth. So as far as I'm concerned, it's impossible to replace. We're not going to be able to get you someplace where you're not going to notice that it isn't there. But let me ask a couple questions. One, sure. What do you play?
Piano.
Okay. Hey, Beethoven did okay with that, Def. I would just eat whatever you want and don't worry about it. You'll be able to get by and feel alone. No, I'm just kidding.
It's pretty annoying. It's a very annoying thing when it comes out. I can only imagine.
We're doing some background research on your condition right now because it's not anything that we've heard of here. And so I can't know exactly whether we're talking about a sodium specific issue. When you talked to your doctors about this, what did they or what did he or she suggest to you?
They don't know a lot about it. He said it's kind of like when the light bulb goes out, you don't really know what it is until you break the light bulb open. So unless we could break you open and see inside, we can't really tell. But they do know that it's a condition that fluid builds up in the inner ear, and they don't know why. There's research being done.
Well, let's talk about the other things that you do eat. I mean, you realize, of course, that the great majority of the sodium chloride, the actual salt that's ingested day to day by Americans, comes in the form of prepared foods and fast food. So
right.
The number one thing would be to get rid of those things. What you want to do is you want to at least take control of what little salt you can have so that you can use it strategically. Now, you've said that you've had to cut back very, very stringently, but you didn't say you couldn't have any at all.
Oh, no. I mean, 1,000 milligrams, you just have to plan accordingly.
I mean, 1,000 milligrams is that's a lot of salt. I mean, that's a fair amount of salt. So here's what I would do, okay? Obviously, you've got a condition that is dynamic. It's in flux, right? It changes. It's not just like, okay, I got a tumor growing in my head. You've got a situation that needs to be more managed than anything else. So the number one thing that I would do is I would absolutely swear off processed foods, okay? Because believe me, just a can of soup alone is like, that's like Lot's wife dissolved and put into a can. So you want to stay away from that. I would also stay away from any fast food. Basically, I wouldn't go out a lot to eat unless you're eating someplace where you know you're going to get something that can be low sodium, like salads, with a low sodium dressing or something. But, even things like stews and chilies, you just don't know what somebody's putting them. So take control of it and do your own cooking and so that you can see what sodium is being added. Now, of course, sodium is native. It's already in a lot of foods. You know, I mean, red meat, for instance, already has sodium in it because the animal that you're eating already ate some. Whereas something like pasta doesn't have a lot of salt in it, but you sure do notice it if you don't put it there. So what I would suggest you do is do all of your own cooking, number one. Number two, look for recipes where other strong flavors can be brought to bear that work in concert with a smaller amount of salt. For me, I would suggest things that involve other spices like curries, which don't actually require that much salt. And I would also look to things that have a fair amount of acidity in them. They call for a good bit of vinegar and whatnot. You know, keep very much in mind that there are a lot of other things you can add to food in the kitchen that are high in sodium and sodium chloride, soy sauce, ingredients like capers and olives. You know, salt is hiding in a lot of places, so you're going to have to be really conscious about that. But, that said, a little soy sauce goes a long way on some sautéed vegetables when the vegetables don't contain any other sodium. So my number one advice for you, if you don't want to go into the potassium chloride roots, of the salt replacements, then you're going to have to do all your cooking yourself, and you're going to have to start with very, very small amounts of salt and just see if you can use other spices to try to kind of make up for it.
Great. Thank you.
That's about all that I can tell you because I don't know much about your condition. I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV, so I'm not going to lie to you and say I know I can fix you. But I do know that every person that I've talked to about lowering their sodium, once they're taking responsibility for putting in a food themselves, things get better.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. I appreciate it very much.
You are very, very welcome. I wish you good luck, and I hope that they can fix that for you without having to, cut your ears off. Right now, I'm going to answer some questions that you have all sent to me through askalton@altonbrown.com, Facebook, and Twitter. A lady who identifies herself simply as Di contacted us by email and said, "So, was that really your cat or just a PR pawn?" Yeah, you know, me and my PR team sat down and thought, you know, we really aren't getting any traction with the cat people. And everyone knows that, you know, cat lovers and cat enthusiasts are a majority of the traffic on the internet. We know that from looking at YouTube. So obviously what I need is I need to get a cat and I need to get some pictures of me with a cat to put on the internet, because I'll get more Twitter followers or more Facebook likes if I have a cat. And so we went down to the shelter there and picked out this big fluffy thing, this fluff ball, black and white cat with these big green eyes. And we went back to the house and we did some photos with it. And then we took it back to the shelter. Yep. That's the way it happened. Paul Letty emailed me and asked this question, which is a really good one, and it's kind of a personal thing, but I'm going to talk about it. Now that you have changed your diet, what has been the hardest part to maintain? Any cravings that still drive you crazy? That's really it's a great question. And it's funny, I used to have a lot more food cravings than I do now. I mean, I still have cravings, and I'm still a snack monster. Snacking has always been my evil place, but I don't automatically go to the places that I used to go. I don't, you know, munch cookies. I don't munch cake. I tend to munch healthier stuff, but I do definitely have cravings. And I'll tell you right now, what I crave is a freaking cocktail. I crave booze, drink, wine. I like that stuff. I like the way it tastes, and I like the way it makes me feel. And I crave, you know, a couple of fingers of bourbon and a glass of some ice. And I got to tell you, kids, that stuff will put on the weight. And don't even get me started about beer. I mean, I drink maybe 10 beers a year, because when I drink beer, I mean, it's like a loaf of bread, and you know, and it goes onto my body kind of like a loaf of bread would. So alcohol is a tough one for me. And when I was really heavily trying to lose weight, I limited myself to one alcoholic drink a week. And it was usually a big one. It was usually a martini. I've had a very, very difficult time maintaining that. And I just like it. I like the culture of it. I like the sound of a cocktail shaker. I like the social experience of a cocktail. But I would say that's the big one. And, you know, if there was a food, you know, I probably eat way too many nuts. I should probably like have a quarter of the amount of nuts that I do. But did anybody really ever get fat on nuts? I don't know. I kind of doubt it. Thanks for the question, though. It was very personal, and I hope I didn't overshare. All right, that's all the time we have for questions this week. Thank you, one and all, for sending in your culinary queries and conundrums. So here on the Alton Browncast, we are blessed to have here on the other side of the table, Mr. Lucky Yates.
Wipe that smirk off your face, mister, when you say blessed.
Mr. Lucky Yates, you're an actual celebrity type guy.
I know. What happened?
Archer happened.
I know, happened to you. Like, what happened in my life? I don't know how this went down.
I bet now you've gotten to the point where people used to recognize you for Good Eats.
No, they still do.
But you're Dr. Krieger, for gosh sakes.
You're that's all vocal, right?
And so, yeah, but as soon as you talk.
Yeah, sometimes they nab it. A lot of times, no, a lot of times they don't. A lot of times I'll just, you know, it'll come up in conversation. Then I say, you know, I'm on Archer. And they're like, oh my God, wait, who are you? And then I'll tell them. And they're like, oh yeah, it sounds just like, unless I'm at a con. And then, you know,
and then
I'm there because
know.
I'm, because of that.
Is your voice significantly different?
No,
though,
it's my voice. It's a little, I just kind of keep it low.
It's lower. It's a little gravelier right down there. Yeah, it's down.
He's
a lower talker than you are.
Yeah. Just a slight bit.
But it's not 100% you.
No.
No, it's still a character.
This is a lunatic. I mean, you know.
Well, he is a lunatic.
So it's not me. I'm barely mad, sir.
You're mad, but not yes. Full on. Yeah. Not full on crazy.
I don't know how to make clones nor bionics. So.
If you did, though.
Oh, man. Could you imagine?
I want a bionic clone.
I want a first thing I want. Just for spare parts.
Sure.
Because, you know, once the liver starts going, just swap it out.
Or whatever.
One of those dudes in a tank. We'll yep. never wake them up.
Just harvest the stuff.
Yeah. Yep. My little Lucky Eights farm.
Oh, those would be great, great times.
Until when the day happens. Comes when I can just download myself into a robot and then just the robot revolution will happen.
What kind of robot? I mean, like, would it be like a giant humanoid type robot or would you rather be something else, you know?
Oh,
I mean,
like an R2-D2 type. Yeah, I mean,
would you rather be a drone-y kind of, like a little metal penguin?
No, I would be like one of those. Yeah, it would be a metal penguin because that would be so handy. It would just nothing but convenience.
Those wings aren't good for anything.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Hold on. I'll get there. I have to waddle. I'll be across the street about an hour.
But they're very good on ice.
Yeah. Well,
extremely good on ice.
To me in Atlanta for being
oh, you'd have to move. You'd have to move.
Yeah, I'd have to move way north. No,
I'm surprised you haven't moved, though. I mean, Hollywood, you know, hasn't called. You're not New York.
Really? Why would unless somebody called me up and said, hey, we want you to have a sitcom and then we're going to, you know, you have to be here. And then I would go. But
are there any good sitcoms left on TV, though?
No, I don't know. I don't digital. Watch regular television.
I don't know. Do you even have cable anymore?
I do, but it just comes with the place. So it's not my choice.
Got it.
It's free. I watch a lot of TV, but it's all like the Science Channel and History 2
yeah.
and stuff like that.
Well, what's going on History 2 these days?
I watch a lot of like how the universe works and
yeah.
all that kind of stuff.
Those are good shows.
Yeah, it's great.
Those are good shows.
The actual History Channel has its first scripted show, Vikings.
Vikings.
And it is awesome. I don't know if you've ever
seen it. I haven't watched it. I haven't watched Vikings yet.
Gabriel Byrne is the villain. He's sort of the head of this clan of Vikings, and he's totally evil. And he's great. It's a super cool show because you get a lot of history going on with it. And then it's a great story to follow.
Well, obviously they're ripping the Game of Thrones vibe.
Well, you got to, right?
Because, you know, it's where it's at.
Yeah.
So
it's everything now. Swords and dragons. And I'm assuming you never read the books. You don't have time to read books.
They've been out for a while. I read part of the first one. I just couldn't. It's a commitment. It's a
really
lifestyle,
is, man.
You know,
and I fell into it and I just went straight through.
Did you?
Yeah. But Peter Dinklage, his character Tyrion is sort of a lot more grotesque in the books. You know,
yeah.
Everything's like all the characters are a lot younger than they are in the show, of course, you know, because right. it's medieval times. And sure, of course, when you're 13, get married now.
Because you're middle age.
Yeah, you've come. Yeah, exactly. You got to start pumping out kids because you're going to be dead in your 30s.
Yep. So, if you make it that long.
Right.
Yeah.
But so Tyrion's a lot more grotesque in the book. So he's like, you watch pretty Tyrion on the TV show.
You could see the more
look at him,
the
he's
clean,
so
handsome
dashing.
One. He is right. dashing, you know. Yeah. He is. So no doubt about
enough
it.
Enough of that.
Enough about that.
What's going on with you, mister? What is this brown cast I'm on?
The Alton Brown cast is my new attempt at spending money to make media that doesn't make me any money back. It's it's a subtractive process. I'm in it for the money.
Hey man, Mark Maron has a very successful podcast and he just spun it into a really great show.
Yeah. That's probably not going to happen to me though.
Well, you never know what will happen. You just got to start getting listeners. Is that your whole ploy, is to try to tap into the Archer fans for listeners?
Yeah, that's it. That's the only reason that I had you on is because I'm trying to tap into the Archer fans. Because once I get all 500 of them, I'm going to really be rolling
hey man,
in high
we
cotton.
Do a little tour
yeah,
with
a
that
little
show
tour.
And we sell out
yeah,
nice.
I know. Sell out, yeah, at the Ramada Inn, you know, Ballroom B.
I will have you know, sir, we played the Fillmore in San Francisco.
Did you?
The historic
you know, the
Fillmore
is not as big as it looks.
I know, it's not.
It's we just 200 seeds.
We just killed.
No, kidding.
Filled a couple of 3,500 housers.
That's actually
pretty
awesome.
Great, yeah,
but it's fun.
It's fun. It's fun because I get to see the cast. We never get to see one another.
No, because you're all in a little booth
yeah,
by
I
yourself,
completely alone.
Have you ever wanted to do it as an ensemble recording?
Would be so inconvenient because two of them are in New York, three of them are in L.A. Three of us are here, and so, like, to try to get everybody, you know, we'd have to bring, you know, it's sets and sets of first-class tickets.
No, you just get an Archer airship, a giant blimp.
Excelsior.
And put the,
there you go. There is one in the Archer universe.
I know. And I just couldn't remember the name of it. And then you guys just do it in that. You build a studio in that, and then everybody just rendezvous, and you do it in the airship.
With the lovely background of...
You can filter that out. We can filter that out.
I don't know how sound works.
Oh, it's push of a button. There's a filter for that. It's not...
Take out the...
Yeah. I learned that on Good Eats.
Dirigible propellers.
Oh, absolutely. That guy in there, Patrick Belden, at the soundboard, in one Good Eats episode, removed a chainsaw from a scene. We were doing an exterior, and somebody across the street decided to like cut down a tree and cut up little pieces. He's gone. But yes, you, Lucky Yates, sitting here, is one of the first actors to be in Good Eats. Actually, I don't even remember. What was the first episode? That's not true.
I played a character called Niedermeyer. We were at like a cook's warehouse, and I was overactive, like an excited salesperson because I was like a nerd for you. It was some sort of ploy of like W's not always going to be and so we need this sort of other foil.
But then after that, things got better. You did better roles.
It was
you played Death.
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of my first roles.
Death was the rutabaga.
Yeah.
No. Rhubarb.
Rhubarb, I mean.
Rutabagas only look deadly. Idea. They're not actually deadly, whereas rhubarb actually
can. What is a rutabaga? Like a giant turnip?
Just imagine a really big turnip with slightly yellow skin, and you're pretty much there.
Ew.
And anybody that tells you they don't taste as acrid as turnips. I think they have less to offer, in fact, than turnips. I'm not a big rutabaga fan.
What do you make with them?
You know, pie? Stews and things, you know, stews. No, you don't make pie. It'd be a really bad pie. Be like, rutabaga pie again.
I can guarantee you I've never eaten rutabaga in my life.
You may have, but you just wouldn't have known it. They can be pureed like potatoes, but usually you roast them, you chop them up and roast them in with other vegetables. I don't care for them.
Is it a British thing? Like, who loves them?
Nobody's really claiming
industry
that.
Alive?
No, nobody's claiming that. It's the tilapia of hard vegetables.
True because tilapia is used everywhere, right?
Yeah, but tastes like nothing.
I know.
Rutabaga just kind of lays there. I mean, they say it's good for you, but I'm just not.
How many rutabaga farms do you think there are in the States?
12.
Really?
It's like 12.
Yeah, a dozen.
And they might be big, but there's just no real market for them.
Right.
You know, I mean, I one time went into the market and there were some rutabagas there, and I took a pencil and I put a little mark on one of the rutabagas. And I came back like 6 months later and that rutabaga was still there. Yeah, because they got a shelf life of like uranium.
Do they?
Yeah.
Like a Twinkie.
So after you played Death, which by the way spooked my daughter, who was only like... six
at
the time, five or six. She didn't come there.
Store.
No, she came in when I was editing, and she saw daddy, playing with death.
And
you looked kind of scary because you were very wraith-like and you had that white face and the dark eyes and your lips were kind of messy. So it put the fear into her. And then you started playing the Dungeon Master,
right?
Who I adore. It's
great character.
I really like the...
And many of these Archer lives, when the audience submits questions, a lot of them are Krieger versus the Dungeon Master questions.
Give me an example.
The creepiest? Who do you think is creepier, the Dungeon Master or Dr. Krieger? Who has more corpses in their care, the Dungeon Master or
That would be
Krieger.
Dr. Krieger.
Yeah. Totally.
Creepier would be the Dungeon Master, I think.
I don't know. Dungeon Master was kind of lovable.
Well, he was lovable. Because the way that he always wanted to squeeze things the hamsters that you had one time or something, and you'd be using my credit card to buy small furry animals to do things to?
We never got that far.
No, we never did. There were so many things that we could have done.
Censorship on set. Yeah. So there was one we were going to keep a goldfish around.
Yeah.
To juice, I believe.
To juice it. We were going to juice a goldfish.
The pomegranate episode.
That was the only character that an entire set was built for.
I know.
That was a big set.
Yeah, I know.
It had the curved Frankenstein wall with the stairs and everything. That was a pretty big deal.
Until you finally built your own butcher
butcher shop. Yeah.
And as soon as you did that, I wasn't the butcher anymore. Somebody else suddenly started.
Well, too many people were like, why? Well, because people started asking, why is the Dungeon Master a butcher? Because for a while you were a lot of different characters.
Right.
But then once you became the Dungeon Master, it was really tough to be anything else. Historical characters.
Right. That's who I was.
Louis Pasteur.
The Dungeon Master and dudes with French accents.
And dudes with French accents. And Dr. Graham.
Horrible, horrible.
Dr. Graham.
It's the people that came through that door on the game show
The game
set.
Show
That's
set.
What I was.
And now today's guest, Louis Pasteur.
Did anybody else come through that door? Who else but
came
me
through the sparkle
through
door?
The
sparkle door?
I don't know.
The Sparkle Door. I don't think anybody else did.
Mike Clark came
through because he played Nicholas Appert, but it was a scene with you. It was a scene with you. You were playing Nicholas Appert. And he was playing somebody else. I can't remember whoever else it was.
It was the canning episode.
Yeah, it was the canning episode. Right? And you got, of course, to use a flamethrower on a giant milk bacteria.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then look away, Millicent, or don't look, Millicent. Remember, you're Dr. Graham, and you had come up with a graham cracker specifically
to squash
the lust of the body. And anybody that's a graham cracker fan, you should look up the history of that cracker, because that's all about being bland.
Yeah.
And you had your protesters there. Remember Millicent? And
I remember.
Yeah.
Patty played one of them.
No, Patty played one of them. And then Vanessa Parker, our lead cook on Good Eats, was Millicent.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't look away either. She looked.
Of course she did.
Yeah, she did.
That was real. That was real life.
Yeah, that was real life.
Yeah,
you can't fake that.
She didn't have to act.
No. She wasn't a very good actress. So,
yeah. Oh, man. Come on.
Well, you know what the rule was on Good Eats is everybody that worked on Good Eats, you're on the show. Yeah.
Did your wife ever show up?
No, she never had to. Well, she was immune.
She was the one exception.
She was the exception because she signed the checks, so she didn't have to.
What about Sandy up front?
Sandy up front, was she ever in a Good Eats episode? Anybody remember? The last Thanksgiving show she was in it. I don't remember what she played, though. Sandy, our receptionist. They're trying to mime through the glass. What did she do in Barbecue, though? She was eating barbecue. Well, that's not really a role now, is it?
If you just go on mimes, it looks like a spaghetti fat person. It's like, that's what it looks like. Patty was just sort of doing, gobbling spaghetti, and Jim was holding his arms out like a fat person.
I kind of wish that there was a video component to this, because Lucky Yates and I are sitting on one side, and then there's this, very thick sheets of soundproof material, and then there are people doing bizarre dances on the other side. Oh. And we could just comment, like, you dance like a monkey.
It's like watching,
there you go.
It's like watching Moominshants. You should get some toilet paper rolls them in clay faces and don't throw poop at me, monkey.
That's pretty
dancing
cool.
Monkey.
Maybe we should get some monkeys in there. It'd be pretty awesome.
Monkeys
we'll make this
seem
a video
like they
cast.
Would be one pain of a pet.
Monkeys give me the creeps.
I would not want a monkey.
I don't want a monkey. Ever since that one tried to poison Indiana Jones in Raiders of the Lost Ark, I don't want. It's that little vest that they always put them in. The little vest.
They come
gives
without
me
the vest.
Well, yeah, but. Once you've seen one and like a little fez and a vest. So let's talk. I'm going to think of more people that you played on Good Eats besides assorted historic figures with French accents.
Yep.
You did play U.S. Grant. No,
I was Robert E.
You
Lee.
Were Robert E. Lee.
And Bart
Hanser
was the old switcheroo,
which made sense because you had more dignity and he looked like a drunk.
Right.
Which
yet he
historically
is a quintessential Southern man. And I am nothing but a Yankee.
I get, because he is from here, isn't he?
Oh, he's a native.
And you're from Detroit.
Yes. The lost city of Detroit.
But you live in Atlanta.
Well.
Dude. I just got to point that
trust
out.
Trust me, bud. I think all the time about, now that I'm making a little bit of money, grab some land in Detroit, because it's like the Wild West up there right now.
Why not?
If you grab a chunk of land and you go up there and you're like, what am I going
to
do?
You've been wanting to do
a comedy theater.
You could start a comedy theater because you spend a huge amount of time doing that.
Yeah.
You do kids shows, kids puppet stuff. You're really big into that. You could go up there and probably buy, 50,000 acres and you can do whatever you want.
I will buy the empty
shell museum
of the Detroit Institute of Arts.
Because there won't be any art there. You'd put the art back.
Yeah. It'll just be a wonderful marble building.
You've got the follow-up plan to what to do when all the Van Goghs are gone.
Puppets.
Puppets.
Here we go, buddy.
Puppets.
Remember
puppets,
that Picasso
puppets,
they used
puppets,
to
puppets.
Stand here?
We'll do a
Punch and Judy show.
But you could have it be like a Punch and Judy show about Picasso. You could have a Picasso puppet.
Why are you rubbing your nose? Do I have boogers?
No,
you're doing this at me, and now I think I have boogers.
No, you don't have boogers. I have dog hair up my nose because I was petting one of my dogs, and I breathed him in.
Yeah, my dog's eight.
Abe is eight.
Yeah.
When's his birthday?
Why don't you blow it March 21st?
So he's – what is that? What does that make him on the –
on the fake dog scale, I don't know, 50-something? I don't know.
I can never keep up with that.
56. Jim. Instamath Jim.
Yeah, well.
Knows.
Yeah.
He remembers his times tables.
Yeah, he does.
Like a good mathlete.
I was trying to pull that up.
I don't remember my times tables. If it's not 10,
if
I don't
it isn't
know.
10, yeah. I want an animal where the age is times 10 so that it'll be easy.
Yeah, he's 80.
He's 80.
Perfect. I don't want to get time to start subtracting all that stuff.
Or maybe get a Galapagos land tortoise so that you just don't pay any attention to it at all because they don't ever die.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your great-grandchildren can have that pet.
This is an heirloom. It's an heirloom pet that lives forever. You've always had dogs, though, haven't you?
No. You're a dog guy. No, I grew up with dogs. Yeah. But then as an adult, I never had one because I just wasn't ready for the responsibility. A lot of responsibility.
It is.
Especially when you're a single dude. I live alone.
Yep.
And, it's literally having a child that never grows up. It needs constant care.
Yeah, but you could leave it.
Hours. Right. I can leave it in the car when I go into a store and not be arrested.
Well, exactly. And it can poop outside.
Right.
And they frown on that with children in this country.
In this country.
I mean, I've seen it in other countries. Is that new ink on your arm?
Yeah, I got that yesterday.
I could tell by the redness.
Yeah, the red around it. Yeah.
Okay, I don't know what that means. Audentes fortuna uvat. I don't know what it means, though.
Fortune favors the bold.
Fortune favors the bold.
Yes.
Why?
Favorite phrase of mine since my high school years.
So you just decided now's the time to put that on my arm.
I've been really itching to get a tattoo.
Have a Detroit D. A
couple of years ago. Yeah.
Detroit D on your left forearm.
Yep.
But you got others. You got them all over. You got six. So who did it?
East Atlanta Tattoo.
East Atlanta did it. Okay.
Amy.
It's clean. Are you going to add anything or just black, boom, done?
Black, boom, done.
I like the font.
That's it. Yeah, it's a good one, right?
Yeah.
We searched around for that one.
How's it feel?
Feels great.
Wrist is tough, though.
It was a little tender. It was a little tender on that wrist while she was doing it, but,
How long did that take?
It doesn't bother me. Oh, less than an hour.
Really? She did all that in an hour?
Oh, yeah.
Very clean for an hour.
Yeah, she's really good.
Yeah.
She's cool. Yeah, my buddy Dirk owns the place, and, when I wrote him to say, hey, man, I'm looking for some new ink and I've got some ideas, but I'm not really sure what yet. He was like, dude, go to Amy in my shop. She's tattooing.
She's the stuff
around me. Yeah. She's got the goods.
I want another one.
How many?
I only have two.
You have a B?
I've got a B on this side and then I've got my skull.
Letters on your butt.
No, I wasn't in a frat. That's so funny. I got a skull with a knife and fork
that you got on the road.
Got that
you
up
got
in
a dirty road tattoo.
Minneapolis. Yeah,
is that
Minneapolis.
Where it was? Yeah. Hilarious. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, at a tattoo shop over a coffee shop.
Yeah, you got it doing the show, right?
Yeah, it was right at the very end of the show.
Right before you broke
I didn't mention
bone.
It. No. It was the second season of Feasting on Asphalt. So the break was in the first season. And I just didn't mention it to my wife till I got home.
What, the break in the collarbone?
No, the tattoo.
Tattoo.
Yeah, I mentioned the collarbone. Yeah, she knew about that.
Yeah,
because we called from the hospital. Hey, I got some news.
I almost snapped my head off.
I didn't snap my head off. I just badly, this bone sticking out of my shoulders. Yeah, it's really hurt.
Yeah, how much pain was that?
I will tell you that, I've been very fortunate in life not to have a whole lot of pain. And the real breaking of a clavicle is a painful, because you can't move anything on your body.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, you move your left foot and your right clavicle moves.
It seems like one of those pains that just makes you want to puke because it hurts so much.
It was just a pretty bad. And we didn't stop shooting. So, because we couldn't. So,
You weren't driving. You're riding your bike.
I was in the back seat of a rental car. They had to get a rental car. And somebody drove it. I don't remember. Oh, yeah. My Jim Pace right in there, my associate, drove. And I sat in the back and tried to shoot the show. I actually did a cooking scene in a truck stop. And Jim, where was that in California? It wasn't Bakersfield, but it was someplace as picturesque. I don't know. No, was it Ontario? It's like a big truck. It's basically a big truck stop. I think it was Ontario, California. So I had to do this whole cooking scene in this truck stop with my arm, splinted and all. And it was like everything you did was just like somebody poking you with a nail. It was fun.
Yeah, I bet.
What have you broken? Got any bad, painful?
A lot of toes and one finger.
Yeah, from punching something or?
It was me as a kid screwing around and sitting on top of a baby stroller, and then it collapsed underneath me with my finger.
You squealed like a little girl, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I bet I would have too. So nothing in your adult years?
Nothing big. No.
No. Wow, I don't know how you've managed to do that. And you're what, 45? 45 now?
25, sir.
25, and you haven't had any serious broken bones. We could take care of that right now on the podcast. No. I'm
tough.
Not gonna do that.
Tough,
I know you are.
I'm like
Detroit.
Wolverine.
Oh, okay. Hold on. We're getting another feasting. It was the Travel Center of America in Ontario, California. They were really nice people there, but it was very painful. That's all I can remember.
To do the cooking scene.
Yeah.
Did you not have an assistant?
No, I had to do it on camera. So, you know, it was actually cooking in trucks and truck cabs, you know, tractor trailer
right.
cabs, and was using these various devices that those guys have. Like, have you ever seen a 12 volt, what's called a lunchbox oven? They're these little, you plug them into a cigarette lighter and you can like bake stuff in them.
What?
Yeah. I mean, they've got all this stuff that nobody's,
that, yeah,
yes.
Of course.
And so I was making meatloaf in one of these things. So I was prepping the meatloaf to go out and cook it in one of these cabs. Cause these guys have all this kind of stuff. Guys and girls
right.
have all this crazy cooking stuff in their cabs. So there you go. Hmm. So most people don't know. Do the people that are Archer fans know that you're an accomplished puppeteer?
Some of them do.
Yeah.
You know, the hardcore ones, they look you up.
So in the end, what you and I would really like to do together is a full-on puppet series.
Man, I got so many great series.
Series?
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Maybe we can come up with like a whole puppet network.
I would love to. I would love to.
There are a lot of puppet fans out there.
I know.
People love
Huge.
Puppets.
People love them. People
they love puppets.
The problem is because the reason they're not more prevalent on the televisions is for some reason
on the televisions.
Yeah, the current generation of network execs think, oh, puppets, they're just for little tiny babies. But
yeah.
they lost the idea that everybody can enjoy them. Because what a puppet is,
the generation,
just anything inanimate that you make animate
that you bring to life.
Yeah. That's it.
See,
I could turn this microphone into a puppet right now, slapping some googly eyes on it, and suddenly it's Mikey.
Does it have to have Patrick doesn't want his microphones ringing. Does it have to have eyes to
no.
be an effective puppet?
No.
How many gray puppets don't have eyes?
Oh, tons of them. There's a group in Toronto that did a show called the Brick Family Circus, and it was all bricks. And like a brick in a tutu and a brick on a high wire, and it was great. Great show. It was just bricks. No eyes, no nothing. But, you know, like a tutu on a brick is a pretty awesome thing.
And probably not easy to do.
Yeah.
Not a lot of connect points on a brick.
Well, a lot of that is just overt puppetry.
Oh.
Tabletop and stuff.
Oh. Overt puppetry.
Right yeah. Where you see the person.
Oh.
You're right there in front of everybody.
So it doesn't matter.
Hello.
So that's like Charlie Chaplin with the bread on the fork.
Yeah.
Overt puppetry.
We did the show that I wrote at Dad's Garage, Clash Titan Clash, which was really just the story of Perseus. It was all over. Like we took 12-inch action figures and made them into manipulated puppets, and you did it from a control rod above. But we were right there. You know?
But that was also video. That was on camera.
Yeah, we had a big
so
screen behind
it was on
us
the screen.
That, yeah.
So they could either watch you manipulate the puppets or watch the puppets on the
on
big
the screen.
Screen.
Yeah.
Which is very cool.
And it was
then
also
you get
there
both.
For effects and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the cool thing. Brian Henson does this show called, it was called Puppet Up, but it's called Stuffed and Unstrung. And it's a puppet improv show, and they do it on camera. And it's him and some of his guys. And so it's, you know, the show is great because it's, you're watching how video puppeteers work because you have to play everything
for
the camera.
Everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, but also when you watch the screen, you see the result of these puppets doing these sketches.
So you get
really
the,
great
the magic and the magician,
yeah,
so really to speak.
Show. Yeah, it's like the Penn and Teller of puppetry.
Ooh, nice.
I like them apples.
I like them apples a lot.
Yeah.
I like those apples a lot.
Right.
Yeah, I have kind of an online email thing with Teller.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
He's a big
biscuit guy. He's constantly baking biscuits and trying to come up with the perfect biscuit. So we
really?
Talk back and forth biscuits. He lives in Las Vegas,
yeah.
And it's tough to make good biscuits in Vegas because, you know, it's really
dry,
really dry, and it's relatively high up, you know, so it's a tough place to make biscuits.
Really?
He's a nice guy.
You can't just buy some Bisquick.
We've moved beyond that. We're talking.
I'm kidding. I know. I'm kidding.
That would be okay.
You know, they make the batter
Copperfield
in a
would
jug
do that.
Now.
Yeah.
You can just
Copperfield would do
yeah.
that maybe, but not Teller.
That's
no,
more of
it's a
Doug
different.
Henning idea.
That's
now.
Right.
Doug
Completely
Henning
Doug Henning. Where is he?
I don't know. Is he still alive?
Is Doug Henning still alive?
Doug Henning. I want to say no. I want to say Doug Henning is tripped off to the great beyond.
He did such a freaky thing for a while.
Oh, yeah.
There's
he was the little hippie magician.
The little hippie magician. He had the. What did he die of? Because he couldn't have been that old. What killed Doug Henning?
An evil sorcerer, maybe.
Probably. Was it Lord Voldemort? Was it Voldemort? Well, that cuts your life expectancy for sure.
Yeah.
What did he die of? I must say. It was Lord Voldemort, wasn't it?
I love...
It was Voldemort.
So many people are on this right now.
Voldemort. Oh. liver cancer. No. That's not funny.
That's going to get you.
You can't make a joke about
you cannot.
Cancer. All right. I'm stopping this before we go any farther. Lucky Yates, thanks for being here today.
Thank you, sir.
I want you to have your own network because I would watch it.
Well, I want you to have your network and I'll just do shows.
So more Archer? When are you guys making more Archer?
We're going to start back soon, I'm sure.
And when you have to do a season of Archer, how much actual work is that for you on the clock? I mean, how many hours of work goes into a season of Archer?
I go into work for about 15 minutes every 3 weeks.
15 minutes every 3 weeks.
Yeah.
15 minutes every 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's my work schedule, pretty much. Sorry, guys.
I hate you, Lucky Yates.
Dude, voiceover work is the best.
You.
Get yourself a that's beloved supporting character.
I'm unplugging his microphone. He's done. Thanks for tuning into the Alton Browncast. Next time, we'll bring you somebody who has a real job. Lucky Yates played a lot of roles on the program Good Eats through the years. But the one that floats, and of course, he operated a lot of puppets. But the character that I'm always reminded of, the time that I had a very, very difficult time not laughing and destroying every take whenever he spoke, was when he played the Presbyterian preacher turned nutritional reformer by the name of Sylvester W. Graham. Of course, Graham preached that the virtues of a diet centered on whole grains, fruits, and vegetables. And he was doing this back in the 19th century before there was that much science to back up that kind of thing. It was relatively radical thinking. So, you know, it was a very healthy diet that he was espousing. But what's interesting is that, his backup was just kind of a little strange. See, to Graham, the real problem with a diet heavy in fat and flavor wasn't that it would, you know, raise your cholesterol, make you chubby, or, you know, make you have a heart attack. The problem for him was lust. You see, Graham believed firmly that lust was brought on by irritations to the body caused by an overstimulating diet. So he believed that in order to live a godly life, one had to eat bland food and not, you know, inflame all of those internal organs. He also firmly believed that spices could just drive you insane. I mean, literally just wacko. The wacko people were very often people that ate too many spices. So obviously this guy was a crackpot. Yes, a crackpot. And Lucky Yates played him that way. But, you know, Graham did do something really, really interesting. It was in New Jersey. I don't even know if he was preaching anymore. It was right around 1820 to 1822. He developed this special flour formula. Okay. It was white flour blended with just a coarsely ground bran and germ. So he basically kind of remade a whole wheat type flour, but it had more bran in it, more of the actual wheat bran. Now, this is a flour you could whip up yourself by just sifting together, say, 2/3 of a cup of all-purpose flour, 1/3 of a cup of coarsely ground bran, and maybe 1.5 teaspoons of wheat germ. But the truth is, gram flour is easy to find, certainly at health food stores, if not at, at the average mega mart. Why do you need to know that? Well, gosh darn it, I don't know about you, but I grew up loving graham crackers. Graham crackers and peanut butter dipped in milk to this day still is the taste of childhood for me. Kind of wrestling with the fact that, well, truth is, over the last, I don't know, couple of decades, I think they've messed with the recipe. And it may be that simply as I grow older, my taste buds change, my perception of flavors change, so that when I eat the graham crackers now out of the box, you know the ones, that I'm not getting the same sensations and the same flavor and the same crunch and the feel of that bran crunching around there in my mouth. I actually believe that they've changed the recipe. I mean, most manufacturers have changed recipes for things like that. And so I just decided, you know what? I want that flavor again. I want that texture again. So let's just make the graham crackers, which of course we did. And the episode, and actually I broke out the book to look at it. Flat is Beautiful 4. Going crackers. We did a bunch of shows called Flat is Beautiful, featuring various, believe it or not, flat foods. Anyway, I just wanted to talk this through because this is a one of those recipes applications that people just, they don't think about. You know, this is a food like marshmallows that people are like, what? You can make those yourself? And the truth is graham crackers are delicious. And they are pretty gosh darn good for you. I mean, a graham flour, I mean, he was onto something. I mean, he was a crackpot, but, you know, he was really onto something. So here's the way that I go about it. And this makes 25 to maybe 30 crackers in the 2-inch, kind of 2-inch range. So, and everything is in ounces, All right. Everything. Now, I'm going to confess, this recipe is in my Good Eats 3 book, but there are a couple of things I don't like about it. I had an argument with my publisher about this. They wanted all of the weights to be in ounces, pounds, and then fractions. And I hate fractions. I wanted it to all be in decimals, but they thought that most of America, that, you know, Americans that had scales, would be better off with that. I have a digital scale that I can switch between fractions and decimals. But I still just hate fractions. I was raised to hate fractions. I hated them in school. I continue to hate them now. So I'm going to give these amounts in kind of the rounded up decimals. And I find that it hasn't really made any difference in this. So you're going to need 8 3/8 ounces of gram flour. Okay. I generally just make that 8.4 ounces. You are going to have a digital scale to pull this one off. But, you know, so 8 3/8 or 8.4. I mean, technically the conversion is 8.38, but who the heck is going to, nobody is going to do that. It doesn't really matter. 8.4 ounces of gram flour. All right, next ingredient, 1 7/8 ounces of all-purpose flour. You know what, guys, just round that up to 1.9. Okay. You know, and eventually I'm just going to round all these things up to the next, you know, highest whole number, but this really does work pretty well. So 1.9 ounces, then 3 ounces of dark brown sugar. And I'll be really honest. If you went as high as 3.1, you'd be okay. 3/4 of a teaspoon of baking powder, and try to make sure that you're using one that's aluminum free, because it tastes funky. You're going to need 1/2 teaspoon of baking soda. You're going to need 1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt. You're going to need 1/8 teaspoon. Now, I don't mind using a fraction there because that's standard for you know, spoon measures. 1/8 teaspoon of ground cinnamon. You're also going to need 3 ounces by weight unsalted butter. That, of course, is 6 tablespoons. Which, you know, you can read on the side, but I'd suggest you weigh it. 2 1/4 ounces of molasses. And I do use a really, really dark blackstrap molasses, which is mostly what we have down here in the South. You're going to need 1 1/2 ounces of whole milk. And yes, it really does need to be whole milk. Skim milk does not work nearly as well. You need that fat content. And then also 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract. All right. Now, as far as assembly goes, we're going to do this in a very, very straightforward manner. This is going to be brought together almost like a pie dough or a graham cracker crust, really, where it's going to be a pulse method. So you're going to combine both the flours, the brown sugar, the baking powder, baking soda, salt, cinnamon, basically everything that comes in a dry form. Combine it in your food processor and pulse it a few times just to bring it together. You're not trying to, you know, break down anything. You're just trying to blend it. Then add the butter. Okay, now the butter really should be chilled. Take it straight out of the refrigerator and cut it into little cubes. I usually use a board scraper for this and just break it down into kind of like 1/4-inch tubes. So what that means is cutting it, if you're using stick butter, you would cut it into one, you know, long piece that's 6 tablespoons long. Just measure it on the, you know, the side of the package. Then splitting that down long ways, splitting it down long ways, so you get 4 long pieces, and then splitting those up into 1/2-inch pieces, and so you've got a whole bunch of small kind of 1/4-inch cubes of the butter. Once you have the powders all pulsed together, add the butter, kind of scatter it around on the inside of the food processor bowl, and pulse until it just starts to resemble cornmeal. So it's a lot like cutting butter into flour for say biscuits, only we're not rubbing it into flakes. We're just trying to break it up. So it really is more like a pie dough, pie crust. So when that's all crumbled up, then you're going to add, and I usually, what I do is I combine together in a measuring cup, the molasses, the milk, the vanilla, together. And the reason for that is that, you know, the molasses is really thick and it'll gum things up. So it's good to dilute it by mixing it in with the milk and the vanilla. And you're going to probably have to whisk that. And I got to tell you, if it's wintertime, I would even microwave the molasses for maybe 10 to 15 seconds to loosen it up a little bit, because that stuff can really set up in wintertime. So add that to the dough, and usually what I do is I'll turn on the food processor, let it go, and pour this mixture in. I find that it brings the dough together a little bit quicker, and then you're just going to get a big ball, and it may take up to a minute for that to form. If your machine tends to run hot, and some food processors do, you might want to use pulses, because you don't want the heat to start to creep up on you enough to melt the butter. The butter must stay in a plastic but solid state in order for this dough to really come together correctly. When the dough comes together, take it out, press it down into like a 1/2 inch thick disc, and wrap it in plastic wrap and refrigerate it for at least 30 minutes. That is going to allow the flours to hydrate a bit. That's really important. You could leave it overnight if you wanted to. You might even be able to freeze it, although I haven't tried that. But at least 30 minutes, all right? All right, when you're almost ready to make your crackers, crank the oven to 350 degrees, get the dough out, let it soften up a little bit so that you can roll it without it splitting on you, okay? Now, you want to get this down to about 1/8 inch thick. Oh, there's another fraction. 0.12, is that right? 0.12? Inches thick, but you know, you're probably going to be using a ruler. So you might want to stick with fractions on them this time, this one, 1/8 inch, pretty thin. So what I do is I put the dough right in the middle of a piece of parchment paper. I put another piece of parchment paper on top of it and then roll it between those two pieces, trying to keep it as rectangular as possible. Then you, just kind of slide the whole thing onto a half sheet pan or even a cookie sheet and then peel off the top piece. Then take a pizza cutter and cut it into squares, whatever, you know, you really want. Most people go with like a 2 to 3 inch square, or a 2 to 3 inch rectangle, depending on what you like. You don't have to pull them apart. You're really just kind of marking it. That's where the crackers are going to break apart after they're done. Then you dock the dough. Okay. Now, this is a term that we run into a lot in pastry. It means basically to punch a bunch of holes in it, lightly. In this case, a fork will do the trick unless you happen to have a pastry docker, which looks kind of like a big rolling thing with nail heads sticking out of it. And it's an interesting word, dock. I mean, most of us think about dock as something that has to do with a boat and where you put a boat, or there's also another definition that's, you know, the little box that they make the defendant stand in British courtrooms. But in it also meant, one of the oldest terms is to like dock the tail of a dog, to shorten the tail of something. And so we think that dock in this case probably is a reference to making something shorter, because when you punch these little holes, you're basically making portals for steam to get out so that the cracker does not rise very much. So that's called docking, and it's done a lot in cracker making. Anyway, so you're going to dock the dough. Just use a dinner fork. You don't have to go out and buy a docker. It's absolutely fine. Trim around the edges if you want to, and then bake in the right in the middle of the oven for about 25 minutes. The edges will start to darken a bit, but the cracker will actually still look a little bit underdone when it needs to come out. You take them out and slide the crackers off onto a cooling rack and leave them there. I'd leave them there for at least an hour before you try to crack them apart. You really want the starch to be completely set. It takes a little more time for this kind of cracker to dry because of that molasses, which is hygroscopic. It means, of course, it holds water in. Then you can just put them in any kind of airtight containment for up to 2 weeks. They are delicious. And let me tell you, when it comes to making a graham cracker crust for a cheesecake, this is definitely the way that you want to go. You would definitely want to use these crackers. So I usually bake up a couple of batches of these so that I can have some just to eat, because I love graham crackers. And then I'll go ahead and blend some up process some in a food processor to have as graham cracker crumbs for later on for making cheesecake and other desserts or pastries that would have a graham cracker crust. Anyway, that was what was on my mind because I have Unlucky Yates on the show. He played a lot of other great characters, and maybe we'll get to those another time. But hey, I've had enough for one day, haven't you? All right, kids, I've had about enough. I'm kind of getting tired here, losing my voice. So we're going to sign off on another episode of the Alton Browncast. I'm Alton Brown. We will be back very, very soon to clog up your digital life with another episode or edition of our show. Thank you for all the callers that we had today, and also for folks that plugged up our digital mailbox with questions at askalton@altonbrown.com. Thank you for all of those. And thank you to Lucky Yates. So until next time, America, cook smart.